Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast.
Greetings, my name is Keith Schertz, and I'm with the 2002 Daily Herald Utah County Name of the Year, Tosh McIntosh. Tosh, we suck. Tosh, we suck.
Yeah, there's no way around that. I mean, we had low hopes going into last game, and they underperformed our low hopes.
Yeah, that's right. But we did talk about will they score 10 points or not. So congrats for us for being relevant on that.
Yeah. I mean, it was just bad in every sense of the word. And so we'll talk a little bit of that last game, but really with it being a bye week, let's just assess where we're at. It's not a good place, but we're going to spend a lot of this show assessing where we're at.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing that's important is I don't want to get into a place of apathy. Tosh, when Bo Hodge got sacked for the safety, there was a guy in the section that I was sitting in. He let out a perfect, "We suck!" and like the 200 people in my section all cracked up. They all thought it was like really funny. It was kind of funny at the moment. But yeah. What it was is it was also accompanied by, you know, the cavalcade of people leaving the stadium with 10 minutes left in the game. Like,
well, at that point, though, you either laugh or cry. And so I understand the laugh part, but I agree with you. We can't ever just be content. We don't want to become content with where the bad news bears.
Yeah, it's a little bit apathy. So so we're trying to avoid a little bit of the apathy here and really get into the weeds here and try to figure that out. So listen, Tosh, one of the big things that I think we should talk about is one way to judge, I've heard this, one way to judge how a football team is really good, if they're a great football team. Great football teams are able to be successful when the other team knows what's coming.
Where, yeah, they know what you're trying to do, but they can't stop you because you're so good at doing it.
That's right. So if they know that you're going to run, you're still able to be successful running. If they know that you're going to blitz, you're still successful on the blitz. If they know that you've got to make command coverage for your secondary, you're able to do that. Like, that's the principle of this. Tosh, before we went on the air, I asked you the question, is there any phase of this BYU football team right now where you feel like the other team can know what BYU is going to be up to and BYU will be really successful?
I can't think of one. No. No. I mean, when they know we're going to pass, we're in trouble. When they know we're going to run, we've been in trouble.
Defensively, when we're going to blitz?
Yeah, I mean,
we don't get there.
Yeah. We can't stop the pass, and
when they know it's zone coverage, they still make their completions.
The only maybe thing there is we have been, I think we're an above average team at stopping the run. And the stats would not show that, but part of that's we've faced some incredible running teams. And so we're grasping at straws.
I mean, they're 99th in the country at run defense. So yes, that's grasping at straws. Yes, they played Darius Geis. Yes, they played John Taylor. Like, yeah. I get all that. But like, man, tackling has been a hard thing for that defense. On the run defense, how many missed tackles have we seen?
Too many.
That's one of the things too, though, that goes with that. So there isn't anything right now that I think you can point at and say, well, BYU is really good at this because they just seem to execute and be successful doing this.
No, we don't have anything like that right now.
Okay, so point one. Point number two. You take out Bill Connolly, who's my favorite advanced stat college football guy. You take out all preseason notions that were given to BYU. You just judge on how they performed on the field and then weight that even with the schedule that they've played, which has been hardy. I will concede that it's been hard, a hard schedule. BYU right now, statistically, according to Bill Connolly's S&P Plus, is the 123rd best team in America if you take out any of the preseason prognostication and credit that it received, just based on the results on the field. Cougars 123 out of 130. Tosh, there are only seven teams in the country that have been worse on the football field than BYU this year. Then the other thing is, and that's just taking all emotion out of it. Just let the numbers make their mind up, how you perform in different circumstances, and then weigh it even with the schedule that they've played. The problem is, Tosh, they've been bad, and they have, and this is what's unusual about it, is they've lost by 68 combined points to FBS opponents. We're averaging less than a touchdown per game against FBS opponents. They have shown for themselves against Utah, LSU, and Wisconsin in a similar manner as a Middle Tennessee State would, except for Middle Tennessee State might have done better than us.
Yeah.
At this point. They have not shown for themselves at all, period.
No, I mean, we have looked pathetic. I mean, if there's a couple maybe things that have looked pretty good, like, but they're players. But there's been no system and there's been no consistency. Like, I feel like we can maybe say that Ula looks like that guy could be good going forward.
Yep.
Chris Tonga.
Kyrus Tonga, I'm on board with him.
Are you sure it's pronounced Kyrus?
He can go by Chris, but his full name is Kyrus. Right. Yeah.
Tonga, that guy, I think he's been our best player this year. And he's a true freshman, and that he's going to be good going forward.
Freddie's been pretty good. Frederico.
Yeah, that's true.
Fred Warner.
Yep.
But the point is, this is like, great, and maybe Micah Simon you feel okay about.
Micah Simon.
Maybe Bushman.
Bushman's been good.
He's been fine. Yeah,
Wisconsin shut him down.
So the point
is, they were holding him all game, but he needs to get away from that, you know?
You know, the point is, though, is like, things have been really dire. Tosh, the question that I asked you before we went on the air is, because they've shown so poorly, like, it's one thing if you start 1-3, you lose to Utah, you lose to Wisconsin, you lose to LSU. Like, fine. That's not, like, terribly surprising that they started 1-3. What is surprising is instead of going in there and playing like a team that might be, like, the 50th best team in America, they've played like a team that deserves to be ranked 123rd on S&P+.
Yeah. No, there's no... Everyone knows I'm a big BYU fan. Everyone I've met in my life knows that. I mean, I've been taking a lot of tweets, a lot of texts, a lot of Facebook messages. The reality is that I'm just saying, yeah, BYU sucks right now. Laugh it up while you can, because hopefully it doesn't last too long. But right now, no doubt about it, BYU sucks.
All right. So, Tosh, here's the thing. And this thing will be important. And I think it's the question for us to go forward is, what are your expectations for the rest of the season? I think everything has to be adjusted. But, man, things have to change and change quickly for BYU. But based on the way they've performed, Tosh, like, I do not think it's worth anybody being like, well, we're definitely going to go to a bowl game this year.
No, I mean, we're going to know in the next, I feel like, three games, if we're going to a bowl game or not.
So, I mean, It is going to be giant as we go forward. Now, we'll get to kind of more of that in a second. But, Tosh, we got a great email in from our man Isaac, okay? And we wanted to go over it. Loves the show, first things first. He's glad you're getting over your accident, so it's
that
good.
That was nice of Isaac.
We're all glad about that. But then, secondly, the question is BYU's offensive ineptitude Ty Detmer's fault, or is it Mangum, or is it a combination? Do you want to react to that quickly?
It's a combination.
Of course.
I mean, football is too complex for it to ever just be one person's fault or that one fix. We can maybe go into some of why we think it's a combo, but it's for sure a combination.
Do you think the offensive woes are due to scheme or execution or both? We think both. Yeah. Everything is everything. Like, when everything's bad, it's like everybody. Like,
exactly.
I mean, he brought up Mangum, but it's like, I think you could bring up, like, Austin Hoyt. You know, who hasn't particularly done good at tackle.
You could name every player.
Or Thomas Schoaf hasn't done so great. Or Kean Norman and all of these guys. Like, everyone on the line deserves to, you know, I mean.
They've made some good plays. They've made some bad plays.
And that's like, the point is there's been positives. There's been negatives. Aleva Hifo. Like, you could put it on a lot of people, you know. So everything is everything in that. And so So there's that. Let's keep going. I was, and for the most part, advocated BYU using a pro-style offense because in the past, been able to recruit intelligent quarterbacks who were capable of analyzing a defense. Anyway, this is second year of Detmer's offense. The team has had no marked improvement on offense. You might write off the performances against LSU, Utah, and Wisconsin because they were all great defenses, but the offense did not look good against Portland State. So he, you know, Isaac,
he hits it on the head.
Isaac's not willing to blame the level of competition. I'm right on board with him. Even if they're really good teams that you play against, it's the thing that I brought up. You have to at least show something for yourself. Part of me wants to blame Detmer, but even with the poor scheme, it seems BYU should have been able to put up a lot more than 20 points against Portland State, which is why I have to put a lot of the blame on execution. So in short, Isaac's question is, who should bear the most responsibility for the poor showing by the offense thus far, and when can we realistically expect improvements? Okay. At the end of the day, Tosh, and so he went on execution, so it seems like Isaac's kind of got it on the players, but I think you and I are in the same place. At the end of the day, it's all about coaches.
I mean, it's both, but it's the coach's job to get the players to perform. They're the guys getting paid. And yes, I'm not a feel bad for the players guy. Like, they're in a good spot too. But the coaches, this is their profession. They are open to criticism, and the buck stops with them. You can say what you want, and that, yes, our scheme probably could be better. Yes, our execution could be better. Yes, we could do a better job of getting our playmakers on the field. Yes, we could do a better job of knowing what our strengths and weaknesses are. All of that, though, who does that buck really stop with, and whose job is it to fix it? The coaches.
And at the center of any struggling offense is problems with fundamentals.
Totally.
And so if fundamentals are the issue, who's that on?
Well, the players need to do the fundamentals, but the coaches need to get that to happen.
Well, they got
to
correct them, right?
They need to teach them.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's got to be everything. This is the bigger question is, when can we realistically expect improvements? And, Tosh, I hope that that question can be the thing that you and I begin to kind of question before, because I think the one thing that's clear, through 4 weeks of this season, you can say what you want. None of the players have been particularly remarkable. None of them. Right?
No one's been game changers.
Nobody. I think that that's an indication. I think it's fair to say that whatever they did in the offseason, in spring ball and fall ball and their weight training program that they got together, whatever it is that Kalani Sitake did and whatever it is that Ty Detmer did and whatever it is that Elisa Tuiaki did, they completely failed in preparing this team for the 2017 football season.
It didn't work. Yeah, I mean, yes, we've played a tough schedule, but we played terrible, as Isaac brought up, against the
Portland
FCS
State
team that we played.
I mean, the thing is look, I'm going to find their best ranking. I just did the quick thing. Offensively, their best ranking nationally is passing offense, which is 119th. That's offensively.
Yeah.
Defensively, their best is actually scoring defense, which is 59th. That's still not great.
No.
So the thing is as on third down, you know, third down, they're getting destroyed. They're giving up sacks. They're not recording any sacks. Like, to me, there's been so much focus on the offense, and everybody has said, well, the defense has no chance because I'm on the field so much longer. But the guy at Cougar Stats on Twitter, he put out a thing out there that said that the Cougars are only 90 seconds. The defense is only on the field 90 seconds more than an average defense. So throw that one out the window.
Yeah.
Like, the thing is they're just not doing much of anything very well. And at the end of the day, if it's that comes down to coaching. That's a coaching issue.
It's their job to fix it.
There are some other unbelievable numbers on that. And Tosh, I'll let you get going on that. But I just one other thing. Under Ty Detmer, okay, against FBS opponents, none of the quarterbacks under Ty Detmer have been able to throw for 300 yards in a game. And the big one is that BYU has failed to reach 200 yards passing against any of its last 10 FBS opponents. That is the longest drought against a Division I or FBS opponent post-1972. You want to know why he put post-1972? The numbers don't go before 1972. There aren't box scores on that. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
So we don't know how long it's been Okay? We do not know how long it's been since we've had this ineptitude passing the football. But this is remarkable, like, for how poor it is. And at some point, when everybody is not doing well, when it's as inept consistently, game to game, no matter who your opponent is, because we played UMass with Ty Detmer's offense and threw for less than 200 yards. We threw less than 200 yards against Utah State. We did it against Fresno. We did it against Wyoming. We've done it against everybody. We did it against Portland State. Right?
Yeah.
And the point is that we, to me, that's a coaching thing. There comes a certain point where it has to be a coaching thing when it's, we've got a new set of players who are doing it now. Tanner Mangum didn't struggle like this under Robert and I. Whatever the case is, that's a coaching issue.
And I have mixed thoughts. One, I want to be clear. I don't think I'm not, and I don't think you are. If we were in charge, I don't think we would fire any coaches right now.
No, I wouldn't.
That being said, it is their job to change things, but there's this balance of we do need to give them time, especially as a team, as a fan base. Going into it, we hired a lot of inexperienced coaches.
And that's...
Kalani had never been a head coach anywhere.
Yep.
Ty had never been...
A college coach.
A college coach at all.
Just been a high school
coach. Let's just go offense for a little bit.
Reno.
So Reno had never been a college coach. Cahoon has only been a college coach for 3 years and only at BYU, never anywhere else.
Uh-huh.
Empey, I'm not sure if Empey was a college coach anywhere before BYU, but he's been out of the coaching game. He's been selling surgical equipment that we brought him out of that, right, to be the O-line.
Right.
And then we have...
Clark, the tight end coach, has been around.
Clark's been around, and Lamb's been around.
Ed Lamb's been around.
And then we go defense. We have Coach E has never been a D coordinator
anywhere. Elisa Tuiaki, yeah, it's his first time around.
We've got Guilford, who, yes, Guilford has been at some small schools.
Yep.
Southern Utah, right? We moved Kafusi.
Steve Kafusi.
We moved Kafusi from the D-line to the linebackers.
He's been around for a long, long time.
And part of that was because I had heard, because Coach E, the linebackers were so good last year, and that he really is a D-line coach. But no one could argue our D-line looks better this year. You can't argue our linebackers look better either.
No.
It's really – we do have some experience, but we have a – we have probably one of the least experienced FBS staffs in the country.
Yep.
And it's going to take these guys some years. And that might be part of them learning how to teach fundamentals, them learning how to properly get their guys to do what they need them to do. We need to give them a longer leash, I feel like, before we start making drastic moves. But it does suck to suck right now, and that's where we're at.
All
right,
so we've got the rest of the year to play out. I think there are 9 more games left this season, Tosh. And really, to me, the biggest thing that you will be able to learn from the next 9 games is about the coaching staff. It is about coaching. The rest of the year is about what we're going to get from this coaching staff. Because here's the thing. I think we all took for granted how kind of incredible it was that Bronco Mendenhall would start 1-2. And it would be frustrating. And then what would happen is he'd rally his guys together, mm-hmm. and they would win. Or they lose 4 in a row with Christian Stewart. And then they win the final 4 games of the year, and they finish up with 8 wins every single year. Even when things are not going well, he was able to always stay the course, right the ship, and collect up the wins. Last year they started 1-3. 2 years in a row now for Kalani Sitake going 1-3. And last year, they were able to collect it together and come together and finish the season with 9 wins.
Yeah.
So the thing is like they've been able to recover last year, but they did that with some of the leadership that got to learn how to do that and stick with the course with Bronco Mendenhall. Now, I know it's 2 years, and so there's going to be, you know, more people that have been through that. But there's new leadership on this team. Really, this is about Kalani having to keep things together, keep things positive, keep it light, and keep them grinding away so that they can find a way to get there. Because, Tosh, this is no easy road going forward.
No. I think that Kalani is the right man for the job. Here's the thing, though. If they don't get things turned around quickly, we're not going to finish this season with the same position coaches that we started with. Like it's that sort of a situation where let's look at the next couple of games. So after this bye week
at Utah State.
Yeah. That is really like a must win game for this coaching staff and this. Yeah,
that game.
It really is.
That game suddenly has become enormous. Not only is it just a rivalry game, but now we got to go to Logan and flip the season around.
Yeah.
On that, after showing not much of anything offensively all year,
it's always been a game that boosters and fans, we get mad when we lose to Utah. When we lose to Utah State, especially if we look bad, it gets people fired.
Yes.
Jaime Hill is not a coach at BYU. The reason is because he got embarrassed by Utah State.
I mean, not to, I mean, these are people's jobs, but for the sec, you know, if you thought somebody was, if a head had to roll, let's say they lose to Utah State.
Yeah, I don't love this, but I'll do it anyway. But I'm not calling for Cahoon to be fired. I think Cahoon has a lot of strengths. But if I had to pick someone that would be the scapegoat, my guess is that it would be Cahoon, would probably be the first position coach to go.
That's interesting. You know, one of the things that I would just kind of outline on this, though, is that Utah State game, Tosh, if they don't win that game, that puts them at 1-4. Now they've got home to Boise State.
Yep.
Tough game.
They're better than Utah State, yeah.
Tough game. Then at Mississippi State, which,
they
is now
made
looking
LSU
really...
LSU looks silly.
So, we're now looking at, if they don't get by Utah State, we're looking at 1-6.
Yeah.
And now, if you're 1-6, and you're going short week, across the country to Carolina, East Carolina University, who's not very good, but a 1-6 team going two time zones away east on a short week.
And where are we at mentally as players and coaching staff?
Suddenly it starts to balloon, right? And you start to look at maybe we're only going to get 3-4 wins.
Yep.
If they beat Utah State, suddenly, to me, this if they're going to play in a bowl game, they got to beat Utah State.
Totally. And then that gives it – if we beat Utah State and we get things looking good, I don't know if Boise State is head and shoulders better than us. But we have to beat Utah State, and that gives us a chance. But this game is the pivot game for this season.
It is. It is crazy.
I think we could win 8 games this year. I think we could win 3 or 4 games this year. Probably 4. I have a hard time seeing only 3. But
well, I'm afraid
it comes down to this game.
Before the season, I was afraid of that East Carolina game, and they've turned out to be worse than I thought they were going to be. But for the reasons that I just outlined, I'm nervous about the Pirates. I'm nervous about that Fresno State team. Jeff Tedford's offense, it's coming through down there. The other one that I'm a little bit nervous about later in the year is Hawaii. At Hawaii, that's a no joke game. Like you better be ready to play
at Hawaii.
Yep. Where their fan base is going to be absolutely ready to beat up on BYU.
Yep.
Like, I mean, that game will hold a different magnitude. So it's like there's a chance that this thing can balloon. And how the team reacts and how things go, to me, I feel like that is a direct correlation to what we have in our coaches. And we're in year two, and it's evaluation time.
Totally agree. Here is something that will be both depressing and optimistic for BYU fans.
That is a crazy combo. Let's do it.
And here's why. If you're like me, you already know best case is we're mediocre this year. And so what do? I already
That's
start...
That's best case, and you're right.
I already start looking towards next year. That the fan in me, and I hate that we're 4 games in.
That's crazy.
And that I'm already looking towards next year.
That's crazy.
But I do it anyway because it makes me feel a little better, and it's a bye week, so we're going to throw out some stuff at you.
Let's do it.
Here is who we will have new next year. Guys that are not on the team now. And I'm not going to read all of them, but I'll read guys that might make a difference.
Sure.
Jaren Hall, a very athletic quarterback, and maybe he ends up playing quarterback for us, maybe something else. We've got the big one for me.
Hang on, can I interrupt you for a second?
Of course.
If your big hope is Jaren Hall.
That's not my big hope. That's not.
2018's in trouble.
His name's just listed first.
Okay, all right.
My the biggest game changer, I think, is actually Tristan Hodge.
Mm-hmm.
transfer from Notre Dame, had offers to LSU, to Florida, to Notre Dame, who he went to Stanford.
He's the lineman, right?
Yeah.
He's the center?
Yes. Yeah. He can play guard as well. Mm-hmm. But that guy, every big-time line school offered him. We've also got John Vaca, who was a big-time recruit that is redshirting this year.
He's a is he a D-tackle?
He can play O-line or D-line. I'm not sure where we're going to end up using him. Another great O-line guy is James Empey, who had offers to Utah, committed to Utah, also had offers from almost every Pac-12 school. Like, that guy...
The reason that we got Empey, his dad, back off of selling surgical equipment.
So just those last several names I read to you, and there's more. There we have Mengo Fanua, who's redshirting this year. We've got other guys that are going to be on our line that Zach Daw is going to play either D-line or he's coming off a medical redshirt.
You like Daw because he was he's a wrestler.
I skipped another huge one. Wayne Kirby was a starter at Oregon and is going to be here.
No, he's a big one. That helps the offensive line.
We are having reinforcements that are coming in next year that should give us, from a player's standpoint, reasons to hope.
So let's get back to our question, though, from our man Isaac, okay?
Okay.
Our man Isaac. Right? OMI. The thing that I just wanted to... So when can we realistically expect improvements?
We will see improvements this season.
Are you looking at next year?
As a fan, I want us to be great. So my mind already goes, we're not going to be great until next year at soonest.
And
that's optimistic.
Yeah.
We will for sure see improvements this year. And part of that is because we can't get worse. And part of that is because the schedule is going to ease up. We have only played one game this year where I felt like we had the talent
edge. Yeah.
That we're going to have at least six games, maybe eight games, where we have the talent edge, where we beat them in recruiting. If you want to have, defining a talent edge is tough, but we have eight games on our remaining schedule where we have beat them in the recruiting rankings. And we've only had one so far this year. So we will see improvements. And it's a mixture of things on why.
But that's the thing, is BYU is just building their reputation since they've been an independent, essentially. Like 3 weeks ago on CougarCast, I shared that like we hadn't beat a top 40 S&P plus, or sorry, top 40 F/plus team at the end of the season. We hadn't done that in independence, except for when we beat... We beat Utah State the 3-0 game. Utah State finished 13th that year, but we haven't beat like a really good team. But what BYU does do, to their credit, is they don't lose to crappy teams all that often. Just my hypothesis is that BYU might be a really crappy team. There's a chance that they certainly have played like they are one of the really crappy teams in America at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we're immune to having a season like that, a snake-bitten season where everything goes wrong and stuff.
It could happen. I don't think it's going to. I still think we will beat the teams we're supposed to beat this year. But you're right. I mean, if there was ever a year where I have a lot of doubts about that, right now it's four games into this year.
I feel less optimistic right now. Because we don't have anything to like hang our hat on than I did after we lost four in a row with Christian Stewart.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is, my dad had said to me on the phone, he said, this is the Nader of BYU football. I think he meant Nadir. I don't think he loved Ralph. But no, like the point is things are tough right now. And there's a lot of things that are frustrating. I mean, I'm losing my mind as Utah's kicker hits 50-yard field goals. He hits two of them against San Jose State last week. That kid was at UVU. He was an Orem.
He wanted to come here.
He wanted to be on BYU, and for whatever reason, we're sending him away to go nail 50-yarders for Utah. And meanwhile, Red Almond, you know, continues to be almond-matic, which I don't know what that means totally at this point, but...
it needs to get better.
Yeah. You don't feel confident when we send Rhett out there, do you? And I just think... I don't know, Tosh, like, it's just... It's not going well, and I'm sorry to the people who listen to the show because you all know that it's not going well. But I do think that that's the main thing. Like, people are saying, well, what do you play for at this point? What do you? And honestly, for me, what the rest of the season is we will learn a lot about if Kalani Sitake is a long term solution to BYU.
And I think he is. I think we have the right man in there, and I think that I'm not even ready for any coaching changes. But they need to prove their worth. This is the time they prove
this
their
is
worth.
It. This is the challenge.
We that also they have. What
and,
I'm
and can
looking
they rise to it?
As a fan, I'm looking for to see who the coaches are and which players will step up. I want Ula to step up like we think he can. I want our defense to start creating some turnovers. I want our corners to just not be running behind guys.
Man.
I really think that Bo Hodge actually, we skipped over. I actually thought he showed some okay things.
He was fine.
He had a better arm than I knew he had. I think his running ability is we can use that in ways.
We can.
He has a lot of ways to grow. But anyway, as a fan, I'm still...
He kept his eyes downfield better than I thought he would when he had to scramble.
Yeah.
I was impressed with that. I thought... You know, Tosh, and I guess this is the last thing that I'll get, you know, to harp on the coaches one more time, but that was a problem I had with Ty Detmer and what he did. I was impressed in the first quarter against Wisconsin because they ran, like, every down and marched all the way down the field when BYU can't run against anybody this year. And then they went out and did it against Wisconsin on that second drive of the game.
Yep.
And... it was like all the game planning and everything that they were going to put in to try to make that a difficult thing to defend, they executed upon that. Then Wisconsin got to see it, and they made their adjustments, and it was over.
Yep.
There wasn't a plan B.
We didn't have our best two drives were the first two, and the one ended in an interception, but at least we had some positive plays, like, and got a third and two, you know?
Yeah,
like,
but you get what I'm saying is and then that, again, to me, is another coaching issue. Is you have to be able to make adjustments and on the fly be like, well, they know this now, so we can't do that anymore.
Yep.
And we haven't seen that either. So there's a lot of growing that has to take place within the players. We can witness that. But also, I think you're with me, right, is that the rest of the season, it's...
The buck stops with the coaches.
It's the coaching.
We can't fire the players. They're not... Getting paid millions to do this, and not all those guys.
And I'm not even on like a fire them warpath or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not interested in going after these guys' as jobs or anything like that. It is quick. Gary Croton got 4 years. Like, we're going to be in 4 years. But I do think it will tell you enough that if they finish this year and they blow it out and they only finish with 3 or 4 wins, I think that tells you everything you need to know.
It'll be a new... There'll be new faces on that staff next year.
There will be, but I also think that, man, I mean, it's tough. I just don't feel like coaches that are really elite, really great, and for BYU to be successful on a national level, they need a super-duper coach.
Here's what I will say.
And I just don't feel like if you're really, really great, you... have a 3-win year or 4-win year.
I think even if we have a bad year, Kalani's the type that still could recruit, which that is the lifeblood.
That's
true. The biggest thing to me coaching-wise.
Explain that, though.
Because
run that out for the
any coach can recruit and get guys to be interested if you have a flashy season. But, I mean, whether they have personality or not, whether they have
or whatever,
scheme,
yeah.
But you have to have the right guy to be able to, after a bad year, be able to have the personality, the vision, the warmth, the sales pitch, if you will, to be able to rally guys. And Kalani, even after we're getting our butts kicked in games, I listen to him and I like that guy and I want to rally around him. And so I think that is going to be – I've said it 3 or more times. I think he's the right guy for the job. He needs to find a way to get these players to play better, and he might need to find some new staff members. That's where I'm at, and these next few weeks will decide what our staff, in my mind, is going to be next year that's built around Kalani.
All right, and with that, we'll end this episode of CougarCast. Enjoy your bye week this weekend. Don't ignore the kids. Get away from college football. I think we all need a little breath of air away from college football. And if you have a little time, give us a review on iTunes if you've enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
I know that people are going to be waking up and they're like, I forgot to give a review to CougarCast on iTunes. But seriously, we appreciate that. It helps people find the show. Follow Tosh on Twitter. He is doing some great things out there. He loves the Utah Jazz.
I do. Almost as much as I like BYU football.
And he's out there riding for Ricky Rubio and his good looks. I saw that tweet.
Yeah, got some attention. I've been mixing and mingling with some celebrities lately on the old Twitter sphere.
Yeah, you and old Donovan Mitchell. How come he's not on the show? We should get Donovan Mitchell on the show. But
I had Kyle Collinsworth tweeting at me today.
Oh, did you really? Yeah, so, what did he have to say? He talked to you about nutrition?
It was actually based on he was calling out energy drinkers.
Yeah.
And I know some people close to him that are big energy drinkers. I won't name them on the air, but if you want to see, go to my Twitter. And so that got some funny responses of like,
I know that we're trying to wrap this up, but there's a great little story for you, Tosh.
Okay.
I was teaching Sunday school once. I was teaching the Word of Wisdom lesson. And I got to the point where it's like there's a spirit of law issue when it comes to the Word of Wisdom. There comes a certain point where you need to...
Is this Sunbeams you're teaching? Or?
No. This is gospel doctrine. And, okay. and I get to the point where I get addressing, you know, this idea of spirit of the law where, you know, what's meat sparingly?
Yeah.
You know, what does that mean? And we start getting into some of those things and different people have space for different interpretations. And, you know, caffeine came up. And I deftly just said, you know, that's for
you want to say, hey, like, we're not going there today.
No, all I said is it's for different people to make their different choices at. President Hinckley said on a 60 Minute interview that he doesn't drink it. He would suggest other people to not drink it.
Well, they said you don't drink caffeine. He said yes. But then recently there's been the other side argument.
But that's fine. I mean, it's okay. I mean, there's some gray areas with the Word of Wisdom. There just is. So,
yes.
I'm teaching this lesson, and this guy raises his hand, and he says, you know, every needful thing, everything has its great purpose, and if we use it in the right way, we can get ourselves in a position where we can use every substance in a way that's beneficial to our spirit.
Every substance.
So I said, okay, where's this coming from? What's motivating that? He says, caffeine, we're talking about it. I go and get 3 rock stars at the gas station when I make just before I make my way up to the temple to go do temple work, and I smash all 3 right before I go in to the temple. I drink 3 rock stars before I go into the temple.
Yeah, like 3 has got to be bad for like your heart and everything.
And he's just like, and it's because I don't want to. I think it's so disrespectful if you fall asleep at the temple. Well, how would you handle that one as a teacher of the class?
Well, I don't think I'm going to condone that. But
I was just like, wow, you're a maniac when you're in there.
Maybe that's who Kyle Collinsworth was talking about on Twitter.
But anyway, it was a fascinating experience. As you know, going to church can always be an interesting experience. People always do things differently. Hopefully you've enjoyed this show and enjoy the bye week. We will be back next week to preview the Aggies.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Cougar Cast. If you enjoyed this show, take the time out to give us a rating on iTunes. Also, look for us on VanquishTheFoe.com. If that isn't enough, you can follow us on Twitter @CougarCast. Enjoy the games and go Cougars!